Session number 20310, Reel 4.
Major Nass, Reel 4.
Yes, there was, as I said, a fair amount of corruption went on within the sort of bureaucracy mainly. But in spite of that, the government ran well. The main source of wealth for the country was, of course, the diamonds. And at that time, the Sierra Leone Selection Trust was running the diamond mining. And our Sierra Leone regiment continually supplied one company up near the diamond mines for internal security. And my wife and I, we went up there with our company for a period of 6 months. This was 200 miles inland, right in the bush, to a place called Daru, where there was a military camp, and nearby was this enormous diamond mine, which was open cast mining. And we were invited to come and have a look round it by the mine manager one day, and we're given a really extensive tour. Very interesting to see these great cans of diamond gravel would come in, locked up. Everything was double locked all the time, and they would come in and be standing in a store, and then to separate the diamonds, all that would happened was that there were some wooden chutes covered in grease with water running down them, and they would pour all the gravel down from one of these cans, and the gravel would go on and the diamonds would stick in the grease because they were heavier. And that was how then they'd scrape all the grease up, melt it away, and there would be the diamonds. And they would be then put into what they called parcels, you know, certain quantities, and sold to whoever was buying. That was the main source of wealth for the country. It was a very interesting experience going round that mine, and shortly after this period at Daru, we were posted home to England, and my regiment was then near a place called Watchet in Somerset, at Doniford Camp, and I was there for just over a year, and then I took early retirement at that stage. I was 38 years old, and the army was just beginning to amalgamate at that stage, and I realised that promotion, which was few enough and far between from above the rank of major, was going to be even less available. And I was 38 years old. I had an ambition to have my own antiques business because my wife's father was in that. And I'd become very interested in over during my leaves, and he said he would help me become established. So we took early retirement in February 1959, and went to live at a place called Swanage near Bournemouth, which was where my wife's parents lived. Started our business up there. We were there for about 6 years, and then for various family and business reasons, we moved to Torquay, and we've been here for 33 years now.
If I can go back to Sierra Leone, what was your own job with the regiment?
I was a company commander there. I commanded a rifle company for part of the time, and what was called headquarter company for another part of the time. That had all the administrative services for the battalion, had the local paymaster, had our local paymaster there, the signals platoon, the pioneer platoon, that type of thing. I commanded that for a time, and then the rifle company for a time.
Were they very soldierly?
Oh, yes. They were inclined to be lazy. I think most people in West Africa are a bit that way inclined. But no, they made quite good soldiers. They were very good on parades, very smart, and you know, would turn themselves out very well. And we had a Queen's birthday parade while I was there. That was quite something.
Was service in the army popular with Sierra Leone men?
Yes, it was. It was, because the only other thing really that they could do was farming. So this made a good alternative. And often you'd find that the soldiers, who were mostly of Mohammedan religion, would have two wives, and one would be with them in barracks, and one up country working their little bit of land that belonged to the family.
Were there any mullahs or other Muslim ulema?
No. I don't think they were very much on the religious side, because there never seemed to be any religious ones among them at all. No. I think it was... I don't think it meant a lot to them, except that they could have more than one wife. That seemed to be the main asset.
What did the attitude towards England seem to be?
Oh, fine. They enjoyed us being there. I don't know where all this subsequent trouble has come from, why there always had to be rebels. And I think a lot of it came down to, you know, the corruption that was in the country, and it just seemed to get worse and worse, I suppose. And the rebels thought they'd have all the diamond mines for their benefit, and that's really been behind, I think, a lot of the trouble.
Who were the people who were corrupt? Was it the whites or the Africans or both?
Africans. I think the whites were... they seemed to be okay as far as we could see. I mean, some of it might have gone on. We weren't close enough to it to know, really. No, it's a shame that the country's gone that way, because they were really surviving well with all the money from the income from the diamonds. They were doing well. Now it's all gone wrong. I don't know who's getting the money for the diamonds now. I wouldn't know at all.
Were there any third parties apart from Europeans and Africans?
Yes, there were some Lebanese there. And I think they controlled most of the business side of the community. They were very good business people.
Mm. Did you have relations with them in any way?
Very little, just through going to the shops and that sort of thing. That was about all.
What was the attitude of Africans towards them?
Oh, they thought they were all right. I don't think the Africans were interested in the business side. Well, I say most of them weren't. There were the more educated ones who became interested and went in for it. But really, we weren't in touch a lot with the local people, I don't think. I think that was just how the situation was at that time.
Were there any disturbances in Sierra Leone whilst we were there?
Yes, there was a riot while we were there. I can't remember what caused it now, quite frankly. It's a long time ago. But there was a riot, and our regiment put it down and did very well. Our CO got an OBE for it. He handled it extremely well, and you know, brought the situation to a calmer state of affairs. Yeah.
Where was the riot?
In Freetown itself.
Did you see it?
Yes, yes. I took part in it. We took our two companies down mine was one, and we just calmed the situation down. It was all through my army career, internal security has been an important part of the training, and you know, we'd all been trained for it for ages and ages. So we were able to put it into action, and it worked quite well. It was the usual thing, a small number of hotheads were stirring up the rest, and we managed to arrest the hotheads, it just calmed down after that.
Why couldn't the police do with it?
Not strong enough. I mean, there was a police force there, but it's not a big police force.
Mm. Was there any shooting?
Some shooting, but I don't think anyone was hurt. It was mostly warning shooting, you know, so that people knew we meant business, that was all.
So how were the hotheads grabbed?
Oh, by maybe a section at a time would just dash into the crowd. They'd spotted who it was and be sent in. They'd just dash in the crowd and grab him and bring him back.
Was the crowd doing any damage?
Well, they were looting. They were starting to loot. And that was why we were called in, I think, because it was getting out of hand. But it's, you know, the army was officially called in by the local magistrate, and there had to be a, you know, an order agreeing to that, to give in to the CO before he could do anything.
Mm. Were any soldiers injured?
No.
Were any civilians injured?
There might have been a few, but I don't think it was to any great extent. No, I don't think it was.
How long did the riot last?
Oh, over one night. Well, next morning it was all over.
Mm. Was that the only disturbance, or were there others while
No, that was the only one. Only one that while I was there, yeah. What happened after it, I don't know.
Did you ever come across any people there who wanted the British out?
I don't think I did. Both the African officers in our regiment were keen on us staying there. I mean, they realised that there weren't enough of them at that stage to really carry on the regiment. They seemed quite happy with the situation. No, I don't think I came across any sort of adverse comments from locals.
Would the soldiers or Sierra Leone officers and NCOs have any grievances?
I don't think so, no. Nothing serious came up before us, I don't think. As I say, it was mostly soldiers would have personal problems which they wanted to help to sort out and so on. There weren't any grievances, I don't think, no.
What language did you speak to them in?
English. Most of them knew some English, because I suppose most of them had been educated in mission schools up country. They all knew some English, and that was really the only way you could communicate, because as far as their own language concerned, there were probably about four or five different tribal languages.
Were some tribes recruited rather than others?
No, I don't think there were, no.
Did you get Africans from outside Sierra Leone joining up?
My Sergeant Major was the only one that I knew of. Why he came to Sierra Leone in the first place, I can't remember now. But no, they were all you know, of the country. Mm-hmm.
Why did this Ghanaian or Gold Coast Sergeant Major think that the Sierra Leone troops were not so good?
Well, he thought the Ghanaians were better, I suppose. It was just a sort of, you know, like maybe English people think, oh, we're better than the Scots or something. It's just that sort of attitude. Or the Scots think they're better than the English. It's that sort of thing, I suppose.